Welcome, everyone, to episode 296 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and the trade deadline is 2 days away. So we are recording this early in the morning, Tuesday Eastern time, hoping that it doesn't get out of date in about 3 hours. We are going to hit the latest trade rumors on Clint Capella, Andre Iguodala, Luke Kennard, D'Angelo Russell, Tristan Thompson, John Collins, and whoever else comes up between now and the time we finish recording. Before we get into that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And we're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
It's going well, Brian. I didn't catch the Super Bowl, but I just wanted to congratulate the Kansas City Chiefs for winning. I mean, what a proud day for the state of Kansas.
It's very good when the president of your country doesn't know which state a major city is in.
So, full disclosure, I didn't know, but yeah. I think I have a fair excuse. I'm Danish.
Yeah. Yep, and it is confusing because there are two Kansas. So there is a Kansas City in Kansas, but the Chiefs play in Kansas City, Missouri. So
yeah, and also I'm not the president.
So right.
I don't have that responsibility of knowing these things.
That minor detail, yes.
Yeah,
but yes, congratulations to the Chiefs, Andy Reid in particular. Very happy that Big Red has his ring.
Well, the good news is in all of this is that the Chicago Bears absolutely made the right call by selecting Mitchell Trubisky, right?
Right, yeah. Hey, he could still win. You never know. It's early in their careers.
Yeah, sure.
All right, Mort, we have a lot of trade rumors to get through. And let's start with the one that Woj broke during the Super Bowl. So I was not on Twitter at all during the Super Bowl. We had friends over, so I was just watching the game and enjoying it. And then I log out afterward and see Clint Capella's name coming up in trade rumors. And I'm like, uh-oh, what happened here? So Woj reported Sunday that the Rockets are actively discussing several trade scenarios involving center Clint Capella. They were engaged in three-way trade possibilities that might allow for them to use Capella to gather the draft assets needed to acquire an impact wing player. So they are hoping to find a deal or a series of deals that would bring them back a wing and a center for Capella by the deadline. Thoughts, Mort?
So I'm starting to think that we have... not turned a corner, because that's like a positive thing when you turn a corner, but we've begun, I think, underestimating the impact and value of traditional centers who guard the rim. I think we've gone all overboard on the wings perspective. Like, I get the defensive wings who can play multiple positions are tremendously valuable in the NBA, but you still need a shot blocking center in some capacity on your roster. I mean, look, the Milwaukee Bucks wouldn't have this great of a defense if they didn't prioritize guarding the rim. Like, they're giving up all the threes in the world, but they are still winning their 42-7 in large part because, you know, you take away layups, you take away dunks, then you take away the most high-efficient shots in basketball. You look at the Utah Jazz, consistently one of the best defensive teams in the NBA. You know, that's due to Rudy Gobert guarding the rim. The Indiana Pacers are always finding themselves, you know, in the top of the league defensively because Miles Turner is there. You need defensive bigs. And for the Rockets to basically open up and saying, yeah, well, we're open to moving Clint for a wing player, you know, fair. But that wing player, you know, Robert Covington, in this scenario, you know, fine defender, absolutely. Love to watch him play. Can guard 2, 3, and 4. On occasion, can even guard some ones. But he's going to be your first and final line of defense, in which case, when he has to guard, you know, the LeBrons of the world, or the Luka Doncic, the Brandon Ingrams, those type of players, you know what? I'm betting on the other guy getting past him. And if you get past Covington in this scenario, who's there? Who's there to guard the rim? Isaiah Hartenstein?
Tyson Chandler?
Tyson Chandler is 82 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well, I mean, it sounds like they do want to get a center back. Right. It's not like they're just going to go with PJ Tucker full-time center, although I assume when the playoffs roll around, we would see a lot of small ball lineups with PJ Tucker at the five. Yeah. I mean, I wonder if they are influenced by the results this year in particular. So I'm looking at NBA.com right now in the on-off summary. And so with Capella on the court, they average 110 points per 100 possessions on offense. They, with him off the court, they score 115.4.
Yeah.
So their offense is significantly better with him off the court this year. Defensively, they allow 107.4 with him on, 108.8 with him off. So I'm wondering if they're looking at that and they're saying, well, defensively, we're not getting destroyed with him off. Like, there's not a huge gap between
right
on and off. Compared to offensively, our offense is a lot better with him off the court. So maybe let's just go all in on offense and pray we can outscore whatever team we face. With that said, if you're looking ahead to the playoffs and you're thinking, okay, well, what happens if I face the Los Angeles Lakers in round two? And they have JaVale, Dwight, Anthony Davis, LeBron, PJ Tucker at center, probably ain't going to cut it against the Lakers. The Clippers the Clippers are also somewhat undersized, so maybe you're just hoping to draw them instead. But, you know, a Utah team with Rudy Gobert, a Denver team with Nikola Jokic, I don't know that downsizing is necessarily the right play for Houston here. So I get, you know, wanting to get another wing, as you said, and it depends on like who they could get back as their replacement center. But, you know, if they could somehow get a good player and not just a washed veteran, like they get not Ion Mahinmi, then right, maybe it's a conversation worth having. But Capella's on a very reasonable contract. This is not a guy who, you know, this is not Al Horford here.
Right.
This is a guy who should have value around the league. And apparently they've talked with Atlanta, has come up in multiple reports. Woj mentioned they've been interested in acquiring a starting level center and talked about Houston, about Capella, OKC, about Steven Adams. They also talked with Andre Drummond in Detroit, but that has lost momentum in recent weeks. Woj said the Celtics are also engaged with the Rockets on Capella. So do you want to go into Atlanta and Boston in particular?
Yeah, let me just wrap up my final rant here.
Yeah.
About, you know, the lack of you know, center priority in this league, because here's another aspect that we haven't even touched on yet. If you lose Capella for Houston, you also lose 14 rebounds a game. That's mm-hmm. also significant. And I think, you know, you brought up the offensive and defensive ratings. You know, I still think that those numbers are always extremely noisy, because yeah. you can't isolate players in that way. There's still yet to come a stat that isolates players properly. I know that, you know, you have the, you know, real plus, bucks, minus, and you have all the like the adjusted things per player, but like, no, you can't. You cannot separate players from a team concept, because everything is conceptual, or like rotations. Like, it's just impossible to get like an accurate number down for value. Even though, and I let me just say that I respect and adore the stats community for constantly trying. I think that's part of why the league has become better, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, looking at a team-oriented stat and going, well, we can afford to not have him, I think if they ultimately end up moving him and they don't get a defensive-minded center back, like, for example, if they get Enes Kanter back, that's not going to cut it either. Like, right. Yeah, sure, he'll provide some scoring and some rebounding, but defensively he'll be a train wreck.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're going to regret it, and they're going to regret it immediately. So let's go into talking about Boston, who needs a center. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so to me, it almost seems like it would probably have to be a three-team deal, just because, as we've mentioned in past episodes, it's tough for Boston to match salary unless you're giving up Marcus Smart, which I don't think they want to do.
Yeah, no.
They're not giving up Tatum or Brown. They're not giving up Hayward or Kemba. So after that, I guess like Daniel Tice is at $5 million, Enes Kanter is at 4.8. They have Romeo Langford, who is a lottery pick this year. They have they're projected to have three picks in this year's draft. They have the Memphis top six protected, which I think at this point it's safe to say that pick is going to convey. Whether it's, you know, right now Memphis is in the playoffs, but maybe they slip a little bit. Either way, they're not going to have a bottom six record unless they get super lucky in the lottery. So for Boston, I mean, I think it makes sense for Boston to trade at least one of those picks at the deadline, just because they're not going to have enough roster spots to roster three rookies. Plus, I mean, Hayward has a player option. Kanter has a player option. Hayward's probably not opting out. It's $34.2 million. Kanter probably is. It's only $5 million for a player option for him. So they have a lot of guys under contract already. It wouldn't shock me if they shop some of those picks. It's just, you know, find me a deal that makes sense for both sides. That's where it gets tricky.
No, I agree.
Like, is Kanter, Langford, whatever other salary matching you need, and a pick enough for Clint Capella? I don't think so, right?
I don't think it should be.
Yeah.
I don't think it should be. I don't know what the Rockets are looking. The Rockets are looking to get picks so they can ship them Minnesota's way for Covington, right? Like, that's your idea.
Right.
Does Boston's picks, who are, you know, which are of modest value, are they going to do it? Because apparently Minnesota is asking for a ton of Covington. And by the way, you know, the Covington trade rumors that are out there, and the fake trades that are being posted all the time, like, we've officially reached the point where Robert Covington is becoming overrated. And I don't like that world, because I love Robert Covington.
Right.
But people treat him as though he's, you know, Scottie Pippen.
Yeah.
Like, relax, guys. Relax. It's Robert Covington. He's fine. He's a solid rebounder. He's a respectable three-point shooter. He's not, you know, a great three-point shooter.
No, he's very streaky.
Yeah. And his defense is, you know, consistent. And that's about it. That's the tale of Robert Covington. So let's not get crazy here.
Right. Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, there, I forget who reported that they've offered, or they're asking for two first-round picks. I know Anthony Slater of The Athletic said, you know, Philly is reportedly after him, and the Timberwolves asked for Thibault plus a first-round pick, which, hey, shoot your shot, man. I mean, like, that's the point of these days leading up to the deadline. Both teams are going to send ridiculous offers, and then as you get closer, it's like, all right, we're not going to get both of those. Now let's get serious. So I think in the next 48 hours, it'll get a little more serious. But, yeah, I agree with you that if a team is giving up two first-rounders for Covington, who I love, for me, Philly is just does not make sense for Robert Covington. I know there are a lot of Sixers fans out there that want him. That's not the guy I would be going after personally. But
no, you need someone who can handle the ball and shoot a bit more reliably.
Anyone who can dribble would be the number one priority, because they have maybe two players right now on their roster who I feel comfortable.
There is one guy who can dribble and create his own shot. He may not be available, but I did see him drop 38 on your asses.
Yeah, that was fun. Yeah, I'm glad they didn't run it back. It was definitely better to sign Al Horford to a $100 million contract.
So here's the thing about Covington, right? So when we say he's not worth two first-round picks, let me just clarify what we mean by that. Like, if it's the 29th and 30th pick, like, okay, fine, go ahead.
Right.
But, you know, first rounders can be, it's a volatile business, because, like, even if you trade a pick where you have a pretty good idea where it's going to land, you know, there's still the second half of the season and the final 30 odd games, you know, they can still change a team's trajectory significantly. So what you end up doing potentially is, like, you can protect the picks, obviously, but even so, like, there's some risk factor there. If you end up, you know, trading the 17th and 25th pick for Robert Covington, then it becomes a little bit more dicey.
Yeah, for sure. So let's go into Atlanta now, because I think that's the one that kind of caught my eye the most. Because Kevin O'Connor of The Ringer also had an article out today kind of about D'Angelo Russell, who we'll get into shortly, and kind of the trickle-down effect there, how it could affect Covington and now Capella as well. So he says, if the Hawks land Capella, it means they will probably have found a new home for John Collins. Though Collins has had success as a pick-and-roll partner with point guard Trae Young, he's expected to demand well over $20 million annually, either in an extension this summer or if he hits restricted free agency next summer. Atlanta doesn't want to invest that type of money in Collins, considering his defensive limitations. The Hawks would prefer a cheaper alternative, such as Capella or Cavalier center Tristan Thompson, and invest any savings in another ball handler who complements Young.
Well, Collins is an intriguing case. Like, let's be honest. Defensively, he is really, really not good. I mean, he's a problem right there. Even though he's averaging almost two blocks a game, which for some teams could be attractive, defensively, he's just not, at this point of his career, a reliable player. Now, offensively, that's an entirely different story. Like, he is essentially a 2010 guy who, you know, can hit over 80% from the foul line, or at least that's where he's projected to be. He's at almost 80 right now. He's 79.7, so he's going to get there. He can hit threes currently at a league average efficiency, but, you know, we know that players who can hit that early in their careers are inclined to improve as they grow older and, you know, they get the shots down a little bit more. And in overall, he's just insanely efficient. Like, he's never had an NBA season in which he's shot less than 55% from the field. So, you know, he knows shot selection. So he's not going a guy who's going to hurt you offensively. Sure, he might be a bit of a black hole, but again, that's another part of a game that could be evolved. Like, a lot of centers and power forwards start out their careers being somewhat non-passers, and as they age, that passing element is added to their games. It just comes somewhat naturally, and we saw it with Bam Adebayo as well this year. Like, he probably always had some of that in his bag, but it's definitely been improved upon tremendously over the past couple of years. So I think the same goes for Collins ultimately. I think he's going to reach a point in his career where he's not going to be a liability passing wise.
Right.
So his floor right now is pretty high, I think. So what you have to take into account is how much better is he going to get at these like smaller things that are ultimately going to improve him, and how much is the defense going to be a problem 5 years from now? Those are the questions you need to ask, both for the Hawks themselves, but also for teams that are trying to trade for him.
Yeah, I mean, I can sort of understand why Atlanta would at least be open to it, and there have been conflicting reports even about whether they are. So Zach Lowe of ESPN said the Hawks have shown no interest in dealing Collins on any of the general terms being bandied about. He did note it would be interesting to see how Collins evolves if Atlanta does commit to a paint-bound center such as Capella, Steven Adams, Andre Drummond, whoever. You know, he said he has extended his range and rounded out his game, but he still looks most comfortable on offense as Trae Young's rim-rattling pick-and-roll partner. So ultimately, I mean, I think you could do, like, I think the best player that you could pair with a John Collins would be, like, Serge Ibaka in his prime, like a shot-blocking four who can play, you know, a guy who can play the five defensively effectively and then play the four offensively and let play the five offensively and play the four defensively. I think you're right that either way, Collins is going to be a defensive liability, so I could understand why, especially if you're building around Trae Young, who is not good on that end of the floor either, that you would want someone to make up for his type of mistakes. I just wouldn't be in any hurry to trade John Collins. I think the guy is very good, and as you said, only scratching the surface of what he can do. The suspension this year obviously did not help him get off on the right foot, but when you have a 22-year-old averaging 20, 10, and 2 blocks a game, you know, I wouldn't give him up. I wouldn't be in a rush to give him up by any means. And if you know, if you can't reach an agreement with him on an extension. The worst case scenario is he becomes a restricted free agent next summer. You know, teams are saving up, they're hoarding cap space for next summer, so that could backfire. I mean, if the 2021 free agent class isn't as good as people expect, if Giannis reaches an extension this summer, if Paul George, Kawhi, LeBron all decide to opt in, all of a sudden this top-heavy class isn't so top-heavy that there's a trickle-down effect. But, you know, you still, if you're Atlanta, you still have the ability to match any offer sheet he receives. So there's no real rush to move this guy, you know, by Thursday, especially. I don't know. I just would not have expected to see Collins' name in the rumor mill, and I can understand why it is, but that one caught me by genuine surprise.
Well, I think the idea for Atlanta, roughly speaking, is can Capella replace Collins as a role man? To which mm-hmm. the answer is, to some extent. Like, he's probably not going to be the same kind of volume guy as Collins is, but he can certainly, like, in Houston, he's proven to be a perfectly reliable, you know, role partner for Harden, and, you know, Trae Young has that same passing instinct, if not better. So there's probably going to be, you know, a duplication of the rolling effect. Then with plus, you know, he brings the defense. It's everything else that's kind of missing, right? Oh, he's mm-hmm. also going to bring the rebounding. But, you know, Collins, with him being a better ball handler and a shooter, like, those are two crucial elements that Capella do not have, and mm-hmm. where you have to wonder, you know, how much of that can Collins provide down the line. I think it's an interesting thought experiment, and to see what they end up doing is also going to be interesting. Like, you could argue as well, because you brought this up earlier, Capella is on a very, very good contract.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe they value, you know, taking a hit talent wise for getting a guy who can duplicate many of the same things as Collins, just not everything, and then say, well, we're paying up for that now, but then we're avoiding this whole restricted free agency thing in a couple of years, and then we're going to spend our money on guards and wings and whatever they want.
Right. All right, let's move into another big name on the market. I mean, he's been mentioned as a possible trade target basically since he signed with the Golden State Warriors in July, but D'Angelo Russell back in the rumor mill, the Minnesota Timberwolves back after him, according to multiple reports, including Shams Charania and John Krasinski of The Athletic, along with Kevin O'Connor of The Ringer. The reports are that basically the Timberwolves, or the Warriors, only want a significant draft pick compensation as part of any deal, which is speculated to be the reason that the T-Wolves have been asking so much for Covington, as you mentioned earlier. They're going to reroute some of that pick compensation to the Warriors, in theory. The tricky thing, as we noted at the time of the Jeff Teague trade, is that Allen Crabbe cannot be aggregated salary-wise with other players. So whereas they could have had Teague's expiring and combined that with Jake Lehman or whatever and picks, bam, that's the salary matching. It becomes trickier for the Wolves to match salary for Russell unless you're including Towns, which they are definitely not, or Wiggins, which I'm sure they would be willing to, but the Warriors have no reason to want him. So it's, you're probably looking at Covington either straight in a two-team trade or some sort of three-team deal. And then Gorgui Dieng, I think, is the other salary-matching piece you're probably going to have to include. But, you know, do the Warriors want him? Probably not. So that's where I think the three-team constructs come in. Mort, can you see a way that the Warriors send D'Lo to the Wolves by the deadline, or do you think it makes more sense for them to wait until the summer, see where their pick lands, and then, you know, reconsider offers at that point?
Well, you just answered your own question there, the latter. Yeah. I mean, it does make more sense to wait. You know, this, in the summer, there are more time. You're not on the clock. Your teams are in a different state of mind as well, because mm-hmm. they're building, and they're structuring and restructuring, and they're having conversations, and they're trying to maneuver themselves. I think there are more opportunities in play at that point. So I would wait until the summer, unless, of course, you know, the Wolves or someone else just got them an insane offer that they just had to pull.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. It's just, I can't imagine, unless some team really does cough up that much for Covington, which is possible, I guess. I just can't imagine there being a deal that makes sense for the Warriors now. As you said, I think it needs to be just it's such an overwhelming offer, multiple first-round picks, maybe plus a young player, plus Covington or whatever. But if you're trading Covington, then you're not going to get the first-round picks from somewhere else. If you're the Wolves, would you give up your 2020 first in this deal?
I mean, if for D'Lo?
Yeah,
because if I get D'Lo, I presumably get better, right?
one would hope.
Yeah, so I would definitely consider it. The problem is, it's the Wolves and they have underperformed.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about them is, you don't really know what it's going to take for them to take that step up.
Right.
You know, they have lacked a dynamic ball handler who can create his own shot.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to assume with D'Lo there and Towns there, you know, those are going to be the two primary drivers. And then you have Wiggins kind of like in the background, you know, being that third guy. But here's the thing. We said that as well when Jimmy came. Like we said, oh, Andrew Wiggins is going to do wonderfully as the third guy.
Yep.
He never adjusted to that. So there's a level of skepticism from my side to this idea, unless you basically say, as the Timberwolves, you know what? We don't care. We don't care what Wiggins gives us. Like, flat out. It's the Towns and Russell show. We're going to take it from there. We're going to load up on defenders alongside them to the best of our abilities. And then hopefully we're going to try to win. We're going to put all our, you know, everything we've got into this. Mm-hmm. I can respect going for it that way if that's their approach. But you know, you just don't know what's going to happen. It's like, it's the flip of a coin. I don't know what I would prefer, the 2021 or Russell. Like, you know what Russell is. You know that he can come in and give you like 22-7.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know that the 2021 guy can do that. You have no idea.
Yeah. And I mean, Russell is friends with Towns, which is, again, part of the appeal for Minnesota's perspective, because Towns, especially lately, have sounded very frustrated with the state of things. And, you know, it's too early to panic and say, oh, he's going to demand a trade. Like, he's still very, I think this is only the first year of his extension even. So
right, it is.
He's not going anywhere yet. But, you know, if things don't turn around, I mean, they're the second worst team in the West right now. If they don't turn things around the next 2 years, that's when you start to have the, oh, he's going to do an Anthony Davis and demand a trade with a year and a half left on his contract.
Right. The thing is, though, like, you can check out mentally in the meantime. So even though, you know, the Wolves have contractual leverage, and I even wrote about this at Forbes, like, there is the risk of headspaces and just basically being the next Andre Drummond, if you catch my drift. Like, Drummond has mentally checked out of Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Towns could realistically do the same, just very, very, you know, differently, because he's in the start of his contract. And then what do you have for the next 5 years? A mentally checked out Towns? That's also not great, right? And Towns, I think, is one of those guys who's not necessarily wired to be, you know, this ultra fierce competitor. Like, we saw that with Jimmy as well. I don't know, to be honest with you. It's a tough situation. I have no idea what you can expect from him moving forward, unless he gets his will, unless they turn the page and all that. It's the Wolves have really just painted themselves into a corner. And we've talked ad nauseum about this over the past, I feel like, years.
Right.
So, yeah, is D'Lo the solution to it? I mean, they better pray he is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, offensively, I think he definitely would be. As you said, they need a point guard who can both create for himself and others. You know, right. D'Lo is probably going somewhat ignored because he's doing this on a very bad, injury-riddled Warriors team. But he's been fantastic. He hasn't been all that healthy this year. He's missed, looks like, 17 games already this year. But
yeah, some of it was with a fluke injury. So, I mean,
right.
Yeah.
And some of it is also probably the Warriors saying, oh, well, you know, Steph's out until March. Clay is out the whole year. Like, if you're hurt at all, we are not going to risk, you know, we're not going to make you play through nagging injuries. Like, let's right. get you out while you're healthy, but we're not risking you doing long-term damage to yourself either, because we want to keep you and we want to see what you look like next to Steph and Clay next year, or because we want to preserve your trade value, or a little bit of both. But when healthy, I mean, he's averaging almost 24 points a game. He's shooting 38.3% from three on nearly 10 attempts per game. Mm-hmm. The Warriors are like the opposite of the Sixers. It's like everyone who goes to the Warriors suddenly becomes an incredible shooter, whereas everyone who goes to the Sixers forgets how to shoot a basketball.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that is the 38.3% is a career high for him on a career high volume. Like, yeah. He's turning into the player that we thought he was going to be coming out of Ohio State. And
this is the first year he's been efficient, actually.
Yeah, and the kid's only 23. I mean, he turns 24 toward the end of February. So he's still very young. Now, defense, I agree, is the big concern with him, especially with Towns, who is kind of akin to John Collins in that regard. He's a better defender than John Collins, but Yeah, he's better than John Collins. He's not good, but he's better than John Collins defensively.
Okay, well, I mean, look, this is like ranking the worst burger joints ever.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, well, I mean, this only gave me a bad stomach for 7 days, whereas it gave me for nine. Like, okay.
Right. I mean, Towns makes mistakes that you would have hoped to see him correct 5 years into his career, 4.5 years into his career, whatever. Like, it's getting to the point now where you have to start thinking, oh, maybe this, I mean, it takes a while for bigs especially to get their feet on defense, but now you're reaching a point where it's like, oh, maybe it's just not going to happen for him.
Yeah, I think it's the latter. I mean, it's simple defensive rotations that he screws up consistently even. Yeah. So, like, his defensive IQ is not good, and I don't think, you know, adding Russell is going to help on that defense. And that's why I said, like, you would need to flank them with a ton of defenders.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, ironically, you would have to give up Covington to actually get Russell. So you basically have to reset your franchise in some capacity. You have to say, well, offense first, and then let's go get the defense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't know if that's a great way of planning it, but...
Okay, you do still have Culver, Okogie, you know, some wings with defensive potential. Wiggins, again, in theory...
Well, assuming you keep them in that trade, assuming that's not a requirement for Golden State to get one of those guys. I mean, look, if I'm Golden State, I know that Jared Culver has struggled this year. I know, trust me. But that guy could be interesting under the right coach and the right leadership.
Or if you're constructing a three-team deal, like I think Golden State in any trade is going to want win-now players. Because when Steph and Clay come back, when Dre... You know, Dre's healthy but kind of half-assing this season.
Right.
Like, their window is now. It's not, you know, 5 years from now. I don't know that they're going to go after young prospects more so than, you know, give me a guy. Like, a Covington would make sense for them because he could fit in that window. I mean, this year it would make no sense, but after that, he could be a very valuable piece to plug in next to Steph, Clay, and between Draymond.
I'm not so sure that Culver is not going to be, you know, a significantly better player next year. I think he is. I think he could be, not, you know, I'm not saying win now player in that sense, but I think next year he could definitely contribute to a winning team and not do so like in a limited fashion. I think he could be a pretty good piece.
Your hopes for young guys always astound me.
I like the young guys.
I do too. I
don't want to be one of those grouchy old, you know, veterans that's sitting there going, well, you know what, the kids, they can't play. Back in my day, I'll tell you what. Like, no, I'm not going to be one of those. I think Culver does add something right now that a lot of players on the current Warriors don't, and that's ball handling for a wing. You know, they were used to that with Iggy. They were used to that with KD. Mm-hmm. Like, even if you bring in Covington, like, he can't handle the basketball in the same regard. He just can't. Like, Culver, even right now, at the age of 20, is a very advanced ball handler. Mm-hmm. So that would open up the floor a little bit more for Steph. It would open up the court a little bit more for Clay. You don't really need to open up the floor for Dre because he's going to do Dre things, and that's going to be it. But I'm just saying there are layers to it that I think should be considered, and I wouldn't blame Golden State whatsoever for looking at Culver and going, you know what, we can mold him in our image. And after one summer with us and one training, one summer league, one training camp, you know, we can have something on our hands that is a substantial upgrade for, you know, our current alternatives.
Yeah, that's fair. Let's hit Andre Iguodala now, Mort, because he was the big topic of discussion last night on Twitter. Because David Aldridge of The Athletic reported Iguodala is prepared to sit out the rest of the season if Memphis isn't able to orchestrate a trade with one of the agreed-upon teams he designated by Thursday's trade deadline. He did not specify the agreed-upon teams, who they are, so we can only speculate. I mean, I'm assuming it's either LA team. I have no idea who else is on that list. Probably the Bucks, I would think, because he, you know, why wouldn't you want to go there? I just saw Shams Charania of The Athletic report Miami is in on it as well.
That's great. But that's all great. But I still want his ass to play before he starts demanding where to go. So
right. So yeah, where do you stand? Because this has kind of been the topic even before this report came out, but I've seen him, you know, come up a couple times in recent days where people are like, well, you know, Memphis right now is the 8th seed. Why not just suit up for them? And, you know, you're probably not going to beat the Lakers in the first round, but, you know, why not just give it your all for this team that's paying you almost $18 million, and then you have the freedom to choose where you go in the summer?
Because he's not thinking logically. I don't know. Look, I have a problem with this. I really do. I think, you know, when a guy in the NBA wins a ring and is older, like, there's some unwritten rule saying, oh, I can sit out. I can do these things. I can demand to go to certain places. And I understand that. I understand the willingness to say, you know what, I don't want to waste the rest of my NBA career, you know, playing for bad teams. Because I am so nuanced in my game that I can provide something more to a championship contender. I get that logic. I really, really do. But here's the thing. The Memphis Grizzlies are paying you $17 million to play basketball, and you're not playing basketball. You're 36 years old. You haven't played in 7 damn months. Like, look, the Iguodala supposed trade value or whatever, it's just, this is why I said at the top of the show that I think wing players, defensive-oriented wing players, are now getting just a little bit, like, overrated. Mm-hmm. Like, I get that Iggy can provide something, but we have no idea to what extent. When you're 36 and you haven't played for 7 months, like, don't give me that whole, well, you know, we know who he is. He's going to come back and be just as effective. Yeah, sure, he might. He might also not. He might look exactly his age and be a complete liability. He might look worse than Vince Carter out there. You have no idea. And that's with all respect to Vince. And I think even he knows that he's having a miserable season. And I just don't appreciate this form of communication either. Like, I want to be somewhere where it's winning. Well, you are on a winning scene right now. You saw the reaction from the Grizzlies guys. Like, Dylan Brooks was like, I can't wait for this guy to get out of here. And John Morant backed that up like, So, like, I think Iggy, who is the supposed great leader and all of that, like, no, his reputation is taking a hit because of his decision right now. And you know what? That's good with me. I'm down with it. I mean, have a problem with it.
I would have more of an issue if it wasn't a mutually agreed upon decision that they reached prior to training camp. And,
well, I mean, come on. You think it was? I think that is just such a made up thing. I think this is Iggy basically telling them, this is how I feel, and they didn't want to lose face over it and said, well, there's a mutual decision, like, so when someone gets fired.
Well, I mean, they could be fining him otherwise. I think they at least have made peace with, look, going into the year, they were supposed to be one of the worst teams in the West. So I understand him not wanting to, you know, waste a year of the remaining mileage on his legs playing for a bad team. Now, the picture has changed now that, you know, they started 6-16. They're now 25-25. So they've completely turned their season around. So I can understand now looking at it and saying, well, you know, you want to play for a good team. You're on a good team. He still doesn't want to. He wants to go to a contender, whatever. The thing I don't like is leaking this report in particular, because you know it's coming from him. You know, or his agent or whoever. It's not coming from the Grizzlies. They're not nuking their leverage 3 days before the deadline. I mean, they have all along said, we are not buying out Andre Iguodala. We are going to trade him before the deadline. Now, by coming out and leaking that unless I go to a team that I've already agreed upon, I'm not going to play at all. Now these teams, you know, the Clippers and Lakers, I'm sure they assume they're on the list. Great, fine. What about the Dallas Mavericks? Do they think they're on the list? Do they know they're on the list? If they're not on the list, are they willing to offer as much as they otherwise would have been? And, you know, go down that order, and all of a sudden now the Grizzlies have fewer teams to choose from. They might have to just take a crappier package. That part, I think, it's fair to have beef with.
I think you're being too kind on a former Sixer, coincidentally. No, I'm kidding on that.
He caught weight back in his Sixers days. I feel like I have to atone for the entire city for how poorly he was treated.
Trust me, I know. I was definitely kidding on that one. I saw Philly fans reacting to Icky over a bunch of years, and it was not kind. Some of the fake trades I saw back then were astounding. My problem with this here, you mentioned they could have fined him. Mm-hmm. I think there's a layer here that you're forgetting, and that is, you know, for an NBA team that is rebuilding and want to rebrand themselves, I should say, it's also very important to portray like a very positive image. For them to basically, say, yeah, well, he's a former champion. Of course, we're not going to play him. We know that we're going to go through a rebuild. Yada yada yada. That appeals to a lot of players, veteran players, and I think that's part of it. Like you saw, so Jay Williams off ESPN, he just had a tweet like half an hour ago or something like that, basically saying, well, he's a former champion. Of course, he should get this luxury or whatever he said. I was like, no, that's like, no, why? Why does that make sense? So because you're a former champion, you get special treatment? I don't understand this idea of as soon as you win a ring, you get carte blanche on the team that you want to in terms of trades. You get carte blanche in terms of if you want to report to camp. Like, let's stop this nonsense. Just because you're old, you shouldn't get, and when I say old, I'm not speaking like, you know, retirement age for the regular person. Like, you're 36, you're still in the prime of your life, literally. Like, you shouldn't get treated with, you know, with gloves and delicate care. No, this is all ridiculous. And I think for Iggy, he would have won so much goodwill everywhere if he had just said, okay, you know, I'm coming to camp. I'm gonna, you know, take care of the young guys. I'm gonna teach them how to play. I'm gonna be, yeah, Vince Carter. I'm going to be that guy. I'm going to be the guy that brings them over for dinner. I'm going to be that guy who lets them crash on my couch after we watch game film. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be that guy who during timeouts, you know, goes up to a young guy and I break everything down to him from non-coach speak. Mm-hmm. I could be that guy, or I could be the selfish dick and just not suit up because I'm stubborn at the age of 36.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I get it, and I think you're right that the Grizzlies do not want to hurt their perception around the league, especially knowing they're going to be one of the few teams with cap space this summer. Again, as I said earlier, it's going to be a buyer's market. And, mm-hmm. you know, they and the Hawks are the only two teams this summer that have cap space and at least have an intriguing pitch to free agents. I mean, the Hawks have been, you know, record-wise are not super intriguing. They're 13-38. They're the worst team in the East right now. But at least you can say, all right, you can play next to Trae Young, who's an all-star. You know, there is a path forward here where we get good quickly. The Grizzlies right now with 25-25, we're a playoff team way ahead of pace. We have Ja Morant, we have Jaren Jackson, we have Brandon Clark, we have a bunch of young, fun guys.
Dylan Brooks. We need to mention Dylan Brooks. Yeah, now. Dylan, like we haven't talked about Dylan Brooks on this podcast enough.
De'Anthony Melton too. Like, we have a lot. Tyus Jones. Like, the list goes on. I mean, Memphis has a very appealing pitch to free agents this summer. So, yes, I think they do need to, you know, stay, keep favor with player agents so they can become attractive to free agents. You don't want to piss off Andre Iguodala's agent and he say, all right, well, I'm not going to tell any of my clients ever to sign with you again. That's
exactly. So yeah. This is also why I said I don't think this was a mutual decision in that sense.
Yeah.
I think they wanted Iggy to play. I think they wanted, you know, late career, you know, guidance counselor Iggy. I think they wanted that. And then he was like, nope, not doing that. I was like, oh, okay. And I think the whole not buying you out thing was kind of them basically saying, well, you know what? F you too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. So I've seen a lot of arguments saying, like, if the Grizzlies can't trade him at the deadline, they might as well just buy him out and let him go wherever. And I get that in the same sense of, like, okay, you don't want to piss off his agent. But if Iguodala has said he's not willing to give back any money, like, there needs to be some bridge between the two sides, because there's no reason other than not pissing off Iguodala's agent. If he's not willing to get back any money, there's no reason for the Grizzlies to buy him out.
Because right. Even his agent can see that.
Yeah. And if he's going to the Lakers or the Clippers, a team that is probably, like, if Memphis makes the playoffs, they're going to face one of those two teams in the first round. Do you really want to make your first round opponent even stronger?
No. Of course not. No.
Yeah.
No.
So
even though I will say this, if the Memphis Grizzlies ended up meeting, you know, whoever got Iggy, oh boy.
Yeah.
Like, those guys would be on a damn mission.
Yeah.
I mean, we could get one of the most competitive first round series of this year because of that. Just that.
Right.
Like, don't underestimate. We always talk about, like, great players having a chip on their shoulders.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, a whole freaking team having a chip on their shoulder about this whole case. I'm there for all, like, potentially seven games. Hell yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely, I mean, as we saw with Brooks and Morant last night, they are ready for him to move on as well. I think they're going to trade him by Thursday for whatever they can get. Like, there's no reason not to. Even if you only get a second round pick, whatever, that's fine. Just take it and move on. But I do hope this thing doesn't get ugly. I hope they trade him by Thursday so we don't have to deal with a protracted buyout negotiation. Because this,
are you saying that it's not ugly already? You had Ja Morant liking profanity laden tweets about Iggy.
I'm
saying it's ugly. Here's my point though. If you look at the other end of the spectrum, like, having to move $17 million somewhat in contracts for Iguodala, again, 36-year-old, hasn't played in 7 months. Like, unless you give up guys who just aren't playing themselves, either because of injury or because they're out of the rotation, I'm thinking like Courtney Lee kind of guys, like, making up those money for matching those deals, like, why would you give up, you know, so much for Iggy?
Yeah.
Like, if you're a contender, $17 million on the cap is just such, like, that, you have to maximize your salary cap to, like, the utmost perfection, really. You don't do that by having a $17 million cap hold on Iggy. Like, that doesn't make sense. I don't think, unless, you know, a team out there is absolutely certain that he's still the Iggy of old, I don't see the market being there.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be expiring, so Clippers can offer Harkless and whatever. The Mavericks,
I'd rather have Harkless, man.
The Mavericks could offer Courtney Lee and whatever.
Yeah, but would you rather, on some level, have Harkless?
No.
Like, you know.
Not in the playoffs. I mean, Iggy, like, he's not going to give you much offensively.
Right.
I mean, probably he's going to be a corner three-point shooter, and that's it. But
on somewhat low percentage.
Right. But the defense is still there, I think.
But we don't know. We haven't seen him play for 7 months.
Yeah, but, like, do you think he just forgot how to play bad? He's been working out this whole time. It's not like
I still think he's 36.
Yeah, but he was good last year. It's not like it just all of a sudden fell off a cliff.
All right, so he was good, but I think the national narrative about him made him significantly better than what he was. I think this is where he lives out those legacy years with the Golden State Warriors. I don't dispute the notion that he was good and he's an influential defender.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely not. He is. But he is being painted with this brush that makes him sound, you know, like he's Scottie Pippen.
Yeah.
Still, at age 36.
Yeah. No. He's at the tail end, for sure. But I would, if you're asking me, if I'm the Clippers, would I rather have Harkless or Iggy? I'd rather gamble on Iggy's defensive upside and hope he can hit a couple shots.
Well, okay. Well, for once, we disagree.
Yeah, that's good.
That's new territory for us. It's interesting.
Well, let's go to another place that I think we'll probably disagree. Tristan Thompson is also on the trade market, according to Chris Haynes of Yahoo Sports. This is no surprise. The Cavs are terrible. They've been shopping Kevin Love, but he's got so much left on his contract that it's going to be hard to find a deal for him. Tristan, on the other hand, in the final year of his deal, he's making a little under $18 million, so he should be much easier to move. And if we talked about Capella landing spots earlier, I think the usual suspects, Atlanta, Boston, make sense as possible Tristan landing spots. Houston, if they do trade Capella. The Clippers are the one that came to mind for me right away yesterday when I heard this report. Because if they're, the talk is that they're concerned about their lack of size, especially going against, in a hypothetical, Nikola Jokic, Rudy Gobert, God forbid, the Lakers with Davis and James and Dwight and JaVale, blah, blah, blah. So do you think Tristan could be that missing piece for them?
Well, he's a great rebounder, which is really what they need. So that's part of it, yes. He doesn't offer spacing, and I think that's kind of a concern. I think it depends on the kind of role he's going to get. If he's strictly going to be a putback type of guy, like offensively, I'm down for that. I just don't want him to take shots outside of the flow of the offense. I think during his tenure with Cleveland, especially after LeBron left, he started developing a few bad habits in terms of his shot selection. And those can really come by to bite you in a playoff setting. So I'd want to make sure that the Tristan Thompson I get in, if anything, is just you're a rebounder, defender first, and whatever points you're going to get is basically placing yourself in the dunker spot so you can like be a target for passes, or it's putbacks, like straight up putbacks. We're not going to give you the ball on the low block. We're not going to ask you to take mid range jump shots. We're not going to tell you to do any of that. You play within a very, very restricted role. Do that? Yes, absolutely. I think he's worth it.
Yeah. So they have Harkless, of course, for salary matching. If you're the Clippers, what else are you willing to give up for him?
Well, see, so that's the big thing, right? Because this is where it gets complicated. Tristan is an expiring contract. They will keep his bird rights so they can re-sign him this summer.
Right.
I think they need to have some sort of idea about what Tristan is looking for contractually to next year. Otherwise, it would actually make more sense to go for a guy who's actually locked up for more years so you don't have to worry about it this summer.
Right.
But if Tristan, who's right now earning around $18 million, right?
Is it 18? Right. Yeah. Right around there. Yeah.
All right. So if he gets like the typical center salary of last summer, which is around $5 to $6 million a year. Then it actually becomes an asset for them to trade for him and then re-sign him during the summer to a significantly cheaper deal. And in that case, if that proves feasible and they got some inside track on it, moving the 2020 pick should definitely be in play. I mean, I wouldn't count it out. I wouldn't like handing over a first rounder for Tristan Thompson. But I also understand that his age and his most valuable skill set, rebounding, is needed there.
Yeah. What about Zubac?
Yeah, no. Again, me and young guys, right?
Yeah.
I like Zubac. I actually think he's got more to his game than people realize. I'm also that guy who likes centers still. I'm not one of those guys who thinks centers are dead. I still think that if a guy can come in and produce, even in limited minutes, but do so efficiently and effectively and put up a lot of numbers, I do think that can swing games. Mm-hmm. And Subac right now is averaging 8 points and 7 rebounds and almost a block a game, and he's playing less than 18 minutes. He's efficient from the field. He's efficient from the foul line. I mean, he's leading the league in offensive rebounding percentage, just FYI. He's got something to his game that can be built upon. He can mm-hmm. become significantly better. I mean, he's only 22, well, about to turn 23, but he can become a lot better. I'm not willing to move him just for anything. Yeah. I understand that the Clippers are in a win-now position, and mm-hmm. I also would be willing to move him if, you know, what I got back would definitely swing things in my favor. Would mm-hmm. including Subac for Tristan Thompson do that? I'm actually not that sure. I'm really not. Now, if you could include Subac in the aforementioned package and get a player back who is, you know, leagues better than mm-hmm. Tristan Thompson, yeah, I pull that trigger, whoever that is.
Like Capella is not going to the Clippers. The Rockets, right. There's no way they're trading Capella to the Clippers.
Correct, but like theoretically, yeah. Like if it's Capella, yes. Yes, yeah. I will pull the trigger on that one. Absolutely.
Steven Adams?
No. No.
And it's tough for them to, like, for the reason Tristan came to mind is because, like, again, Rockets are not trading Capella to the Clippers. There's no way. Adams and Drummond are the other two big, or Kevin Love, but that's not addressing their big needs. But if you're looking at just pure centers, Adams, Drummond are the two big guys out on the market, but it's really hard for the Clippers to find a trade where they can match salaries that make sense. Like, I mean, you could say, yeah, sure, they could throw in Lou Williams or Harrell or whatever, but that's Patrick Beverley, but they don't want to do that.
No, that defeats the entire purpose.
Right, exactly. I guess Dwayne Dedman is out there, but I don't think he's the difference maker they necessarily need.
Like, I agree with that.
I think Thompson is probably, you know, he splits the difference between we can match salaries for him and not give up one of our core rotation guys. And we also probably don't have to give up an arm and a leg for him. Mm-hmm. And it's from Cleveland's perspective, I wonder if Zubac is enough, or would they ask for the first round pick as well?
I don't know. I mean, if they did, I would say no.
Yeah.
It's that easy. It's interesting you brought up Drummond, though. I agree with you that it would be difficult to find a trade because of Drummond's salary. Mm-hmm. But that would be fun.
Yeah.
Because I think part of why Drummond is demotivated in Detroit is because Detroit is just this not the city, but the organization is just such a wasteland of an organization. Right? They don't ever seem to have any symmetry in what they're doing.
Right.
Plans always seem to change. There's no continuity. Everything is just like it changes from year to year to year, and I think it's hard for him to not have that stability.
Yeah.
Go to a Clippers franchise where the culture is right. Like Drummond this year, I understand that he's checked out from Detroit, but mm-hmm. I will still note that a checked out Andre Drummond is averaging 17.5 points, almost 16 rebounds, 2 steals, almost 3 assists, and almost 2 blocks a game. Mm-hmm. Now that is a guy who stuffs the stat sheet and also has a lot of influence defensively when he's locked in and engaged. Going to a Clippers franchise where he's paired up with Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, Patrick Beverley, Lou Williams, like that, Montrezl Harrell, presumably, maybe, unless he's part of that package. My goodness gracious, could you imagine a motivated and hungry Andre Drummond?
Yeah. And you can make the salaries work. Not saying that this would be enough for the Pistons, but maybe. Harkless, Zubac, Magruder is cap legal, at least. You could throw in that first-round pick as well.
I mean, look, if that's the best offer Detroit is going to get, yeah. I think you almost have to take it because they're like hell-bent on just starting over now.
Right. As well they should be.
That would be a slam dunk for the Clippers, right?
I think so, yeah.
Look, it would improve their half-court situation as well, because just off of the screens that Drummond would set in half-court situations. like Kawhi coming off those screens. Like he would get so much daylight.
Yeah.
I would love that. I would love, and rebounding wise, like, you know, you're, that's the one thing the Clippers are concerned about internally is like the rebounding. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So let's just go get the greatest rebounder of our generation.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
that would be fantastic.
If that's available, that could be just such a big difference maker, especially in a projected series against the Lakers with those traditional bigs like JaVale and Dwight. All right, now you have Andre Drummond to throw out there.
Oh, yeah. Game changer.
Yeah, but even Tristan, too. I mean, I think there are a lot of options for them to plug in that hole, but they were just...
Well, not if they play the Lakers, because LeBron knows his former teammate.
That's true.
He's got the scouting report in his damn head. He'll be like, you know what Tristan doesn't do? And then he'll blurb up like 14 pages of Tristan Thompson weaknesses that he and AD would be sitting there like raising his head while he's taking notes on his iPad or something like, okay, I got you. And, yeah, what does he do when he moved left? Oh, okay. Yeah. Like, he'll have the recipe. Like, I understand what you're saying, but like the LeBron factor is just going to, I think that's going to overwhelm them a little bit.
Yeah. All right, let's end, since we talked about the Pistons, let's end with another prospect that they're shopping, apparently. Luke Kennard, according to ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski. Detroit and Phoenix are discussing a deal centered on him. The possible package gaining traction for Kennard is Javon Carter, Eli Okobo, and a first-round pick.
I mean... this is what I'm talking about with Detroit.
Yeah.
They finally waited. I wrote a piece on, you know, or not a specific piece on Kennard. You know, before the season, I had this whole, I made division previews over at Forbes for every single team, mm-hmm. where I basically took out like the biggest question marks each team had hanging over their heads for the upcoming season. Mm-hmm. And for the Pistons, it was obviously Luke Kennard. And what I looked at was his pick and roll numbers and his spot up shooting and all that. And he kind of like, he had both of those capabilities. He just really couldn't bridge them together. Mm-hmm. And so far this year he's been injured, unfortunately, but he's looking every bit the player that I kind of envisioned when I wrote about him. And I think he's got more potential to reach because he's just an advanced ball handler. And when you have the pick and roll capabilities that he does, as well as his shooting touch, and the way that he can, he's not quite D'Angelo Russell-esque, but the way that he can manipulate the defense off of both passes and shooting and all of that, you have something you can build upon.
Yeah.
Now, if you move him, like, you're starting all over. And if that's what Detroit wants, they're basically saying, you know, even with our young guys, like, that's fine. Just move everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just keep Sekou Doumbouya, and then that's it. Okay, I guess. I would probably make an effort in trying to move or keep Kennard because this draft class doesn't really appear to be all that good. So where does that pick land is the biggest question for me.
Mm-hmm. Woj said it could be as soon as the 2020 draft.
Right.
I would assume it would be a protected pick.
Yeah, I mean, you would have to assume, right?
Yeah, like if Phoenix is offering his unprotected 2020 first... Detroit should have called this deal in the second they offered it. They should have gotten off the phone and be like, hold on, we're just going to get the league on the phone just to tape record this conversation just in case you want to go back on it. Because, I mean, Phoenix right now, let's see, they are 20-30. 11? Wow. Really? Oh, my God. The East is so bad.
Mm-hmm.
That's remarkable.
That's part of it. But here, again, in terms of protections, like, Kennard is good.
Yeah.
So the protection they should be getting back on that pick shouldn't be too restrictive either, because then it should be a no. Like, lottery protected. No, even Kennard was like the 12th pick in the draft. Like, even going off of his own draft stance or draft slot, like, that's a step down. And I think it's fair to say that he's exceeded his draft slot expectations. Like, he's in this draft, which is not great. I wouldn't hate it if he was traded for like something that was in the top seven. That seems a little bit more fair.
It depends. If it was like lottery protected this year and then falls to top 10 or top 8 next year, as long as it's not like lottery protected, and if it doesn't convey, it turns into a second round pick or 2 second round picks, then I would definitely say no. If it's correct, if you're guaranteed to get a first round pick at some point, I'd be more open to it from Detroit's perspective, even if it is lottery protected this year. But yeah, I'm assuming they're not offering a completely unprotected first.
Right.
Do you like this for Phoenix's perspective?
I mean, you've got a good player, so yeah. But I mean, and to your point regarding the protection and actually getting a future first, I mean, hell yeah, I'd take that, because, you know, I think the Suns are going to find a way to probably implode.
Right, to screw this up. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's harsh. But what I mean about it is, we haven't seen the sustainability of Phoenix yet. Right. This is their first season being respectable, right? And I get that there have been changes in the front office. I get that there's been like a different priority made on winning now from top to bottom in the organization. I understand all of that, Suns fans, so don't come at me. I'm just saying, you haven't shown the longevity yet,
right,
to prove that you can be a perennial playoff team or just a perennial competitive team. So if I'm Detroit and I see that there's an opportunity to get an unprotected pick a couple of years down the line from Phoenix, I would probably gamble and say, okay, that could turn into a really good pick, because we just don't know what they are yet, and they could implode because we've seen it before from them.
Yeah, I mean, what intrigues me from Phoenix's perspective is that, like, you know, we talked the last couple episodes about how there aren't positions anymore, so forgive me for using these designations, but when I think of Luke Kennard, he's just a traditional two guard. But then you have Devin Booker already. So, in theory, Kennard's probably not starting, right?
No, he wouldn't be. He would be coming off the bench as, like, I think you can make the argument that he could come off the bench as a 1-2 or a 2-1 or a 2-3 even. Yeah. Like, he's just a ball handler, but he's also kind of a wing. So if you take him off the bench, you can use him as a facilitator. You can use him as a scorer. You can use him in a lot of different ways. So I think that's maybe part of it. Just have him be your perennial six man.
Yeah, see, I was wondering if they almost envisioned the other way around. Like, that, you know, Rubio, Booker are going to start. When Rubio goes to the bench, bring in Kennard, then shift Devin to the one. Or, like, Devin as the primary point guard, ball handler, whatever. Because, I mean, he, you know, he's averaging 6 assists per game. Like, he's shown the type of chops to have he can create for others. So it intrigues me. But, I mean, as you mentioned, too, Kennard's averaging 4 assists per game this year, too. So he's also got the kind of ball handling chops. And then you just got 2 interchangeable 6'5 guys in the backcourt, both of whom were shooting a pretty high volume from three. And, you know, Kennard's a career 40.2% shooter from three.
And look, his free throw rate as well. Or not rate, but efficiency.
Yeah, percentage. Yeah.
Like, he's just – he is one of those clean shooting guys. Like, in about 10 years, we're going to look at the career of Luke Kennard, and we're going to call him one of the purest shooters we've seen over the past generation. Yeah. I think he's going to be one of those guys. And I think if that's what Phoenix has identified, I get it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to steal your thunder and say, if I'm looking to pillage Detroit right now, it's Luke Kennard and Christian Wood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I wouldn't be in as much of a hurry to go after Drummond. But those two guys, I mean, if Kennard's available, man, I mean, he's only in his third year. You still have one more year of his rookie deal. You get his matching rights after that. Like,
yeah, you get everything.
Yeah, that would be if he's really, truly available, a lot of teams should be in on him.
I mean, look, I think that the Pistons should shop a guy like Christian Wood, because they don't know, he could leave next year.
Yeah, for sure.
And he should have plenty of interest. I think it could be tricky because he actually earns so little.
Yeah,
the matching salary. Like, you have to, if you're looking for players who are of similar value, like, they earn so much more.
Right.
That you
right,
have to finagle it. I guess you could throw in Langston Galloway to make things more even.
Yeah, or even Reggie Jackson if you're
Reggie Jackson,
for...
yeah. Mm-hmm. Tony Snell even. I mean, there are definitely options. Yeah. But Christian Wood is a guy who would immediately, you know, improve a team. And the same goes for Kennard. I agree with you that those are the two guys that the Pistons should get a very, very good return on. Mm-hmm. The jury is still out on Drummond. It depends on the right buyer, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the one guy they just can't get anything for at this point is Blake Griffin, and that whole situation is just... Like, I remember, was it, I think it was Duncan Smith. I'm not sure. Friend of the podcast, Duncan Smith. I think it was him, could have been someone else, who wrote a piece right at the end of the regular season last year saying, now's the time to trade Blake Griffin.
Mm.
And I remember reading it and going, yeah, that's the wagon I'm going to be on right now, because I agree. I think, you know, he had this tremendous season. There was still the injury, but, like, it was... Teams were still left with a good taste in their mouths of his season, and they didn't, and it's backfired so tremendously.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Mort, a lot. I mean, we haven't, you know, last week because of the Kobe news, there wasn't as much speculation about the trade deadline as there usually is the week before. But
right.
If yesterday is any indication, the league is back to business. I think it might not be an explosive deadline in terms of, you know, maybe D'Lo doesn't move, maybe Drummond doesn't move. I think there are still going to be a number of trades. The title picture is wide open this year. A lot of teams could talk themselves into being one or two pieces away. Or in the Sixers' case, they are one to two pieces away from completely imploding, and they're going to need to make a move to save face. So I think there are going to be a lot of teams active on the trade market. And we will have a recap later this week of all the madness. Until then, please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios to give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And we're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Mort, good luck on Thursday. Enjoy the festivities, my friend.
Thank you. You too. I can't wait to report live on YouTube that the Philadelphia 76ers have traded Josh Richardson and Matisse Thybulle for Andre Iguodala. It's going to be amazing.
Well, I just saw an ESPN article, not even from our sponsor, The Ringer, but an ESPN article where they proposed Joel Embiid and Atlanta's 2020 second round pick for Paul George.
How are we the ones not making millions of dollars sometimes? I'm really, this is becoming puzzling to me.
It's unreal, man.
Oh. All right. Well, on that note, talk to you on Friday, my friend.
All right. Have a good one.
Oh, by the way, before I go, one thing. Last night I went to watch or to go see the new Bad Boys film. Have you seen it?
I have not.
Okay. So it's kind of similar to Hobbs and Shaw in the sense that you just have to shut off your brain.
Okay.
But I will say this, and I have to say that I actually wanted to say this at the top of the show, but it would have ruined my Trump joke, and I wanted to get that Trump joke in there. In that film, they have a couple scenes where they speak very, very poorly generally of the whole concept of therapy.
Mm.
And for someone who's been going to therapy recently, for if you follow me on Twitter, you'll know why. I would just implore people to don't support something like that.
Yeah.
I got very, very upset.
That's fair. Alex will not see that movie with me, unfortunately. So I'm going to have to wait till it comes out. But yeah. But not happy to hear that they crapped on the idea of therapy. That's not good.
But it's amazing that I got to see that movie in Denmark, right? It wasn't supposed to come out until like in 75 years here.
I'm not talking to you until you watch The Sandlot.
I mean, when it comes out, I'll gladly watch it. Oh, I assume we're like 30 years away from getting it, right? Is that your estimation?
I'm going to DVR it and then send it to you.
I was assuming we only have VCRs, man. We're so behind, remember?
Oh, my God. Goodbye.